Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
You're listening to All of It. Welcome back. It's Wednesday, and that means another edition of our ongoing series, Andy in the Archives.
This is the Municipal Broadcasting System. New York City's own station, WNYC, in the city where more than 7 million people live in peace and enjoy the benefits of democracy.
We wanted to follow up on a segment we did last week about Juul and other e-cigarette and vaping companies, including one lawsuit which alleges that Juul and Philip Morris violated the Racketeer Influence and Corrupt Organization Act, also known as RICO, in how they marketed their products. This has happened before. You may remember the RICO case filed against the tobacco industry 20 years ago during the Clinton administration. Well, just this past Monday, it was reported that the FDA issued a letter to the e-cigarette company Juul saying it violated federal regulations in marketing its product as being healthier than smoking prior to receiving approval. So now, especially in light of yesterday's news that a sixth person has died due to vaping-related illnesses, we thought we'd take a look back at how that 1999 case against Big Tobacco came to be, as well as a dive into exactly what RICO is and other ways it's been used, and who better to help us on this historical journey than Andy Lancet, director of NPR's archives. I'm sorry, and New York Public Radio's archives. Andy, welcome back.
Hi.
So, Andy, we first started doing research on this segment. Our producer started looking for some audio about the 1999 DOJ suit, United States versus Philip Morris. We were surprised we couldn't find a newsreel clip from this period. Why not?
Well, this predates the archives here as a central repository at WNYC when the savings of things was left to individual departments and producers, and day-to-day newscasts were retained on an, let's say, irregular basis. So we also still had a foot in the analog world, and broadcasts were being kept on reel-to-reel along with some recordable CDs. Now, of course, it's all born digital now, and storage doesn't require linear shelf space for storage. Mm-hmm. And in addition, the material can also be automatically flagged for saving in a digital folder.
However, sir, you were able to find something for us.
Well,
what is it?
We were able to dig something up. Now, this clip is from the NewsHour with Jim Lehrer, and it's actually from our sister archive, the American Archive of Public Broadcasting, which is run by WGBH in Boston and the Library of Congress. And it's from the day the case was filed on September 22nd, 1999. So it was breaking news at the time. Here, Jim Lehrer explains the nature of the lawsuit.
The Justice Department announced a lawsuit against the tobacco industry today. It will attempt to recover the billions of dollars in taxpayer money spent treating sick smokers. The action alleges cigarette makers defrauded and misled the public for 45 years by concealing the harmful effects of smoking.
Now, what about the Department of Justice? What did it have to say about the lawsuit?
Well, the NewsHour followed the segment that Laird just introduced, and he came in with Attorney General Janet Reno's then, that day, news conference where she laid out the goals of the lawsuit.
We want to recover health care expenditures paid out by the federal government to treat tobacco-related illnesses. We want to require the tobacco companies to disgorge the funds that they earn through their unlawful conduct. We want to require the tobacco companies once and for all to disclose all relevant research on smoking and health, and we want to engage in counter-advertising and other public education campaigns to better warn our young people about the dangers of smoking.
And we also found a clip of President Clinton's State of the Union address in 1999 where he announces the DOJ's plan to bring the tobacco industry to court. Now, this again is from the January 22, 1999 State of the Union.
As everyone knows, our children are targets of a massive media campaign to hook them on cigarettes. Now, I ask this Congress to resist the tobacco lobby, to reaffirm the FDA's authority to protect our children from tobacco, and to hold tobacco companies accountable while protecting tobacco farmers. Smoking has cost taxpayers hundreds of billions of dollars under Medicare and other programs. You know, the states have been right about this. Taxpayers shouldn't pay for the cost of lung cancer, emphysema, and other smoking-related illnesses. The tobacco companies should. So tonight I announce that the Justice Department is preparing a litigation plan to take the tobacco companies to court, and with the funds we recover to strengthen Medicare.
So, Andy, the idea was that they hope to be reimbursed by the tobacco industry for tobacco-related medical expenses, but the district judge actually dismissed the DOJ's claim for reimbursement, which led to the DOJ bringing its claim under the Racketeer, Influenced, and Corrupt Organization Act, RICO. And you found somebody who can actually explain RICO to us. Who
sure.
are we here?
You have what we have here now is attorney Valerie Caproni, and she was the chief of the criminal division for the Eastern District of New York when she spoke to WNYC reporter Laura Seidel in 1997. That's July of 1997. And Laura at the time was doing a story on organized crime boss Vincent Chin Gigante. Now, Caproni is now the U.S. District Judge for the Southern District of New York.
What RICO does from a prosecutorial standpoint is permit us to prosecute in one case crimes that are frequently very disparate. They may be disparate in the sense of you have both murder and gambling and loan sharking, the sort of cases that you might not ordinarily be permitted to join together and try those charges together. But if it's part of an enterprise that you can say is part of a racketeering enterprise, then there's an overarching conspiracy or an overarching crime, which is the RICO crime, that permits us to bring together all of the defendant's criminal conduct into one case, as opposed to having to try them separately.
Now, in terms of organized crime, this can be invaluable. Can you explain why?
Sure, because RICO was really designed for organized crime, because in an organized crime context, racketeers, individuals who are members of organized crime, will commit a number of different types of crimes. It's not all one type of crime, and frequently you won't be able to prosecute the case in order to give a good sense to the jury, in order to really show what the defendant's conduct is. You need to show his criminal conduct over a period of years, beyond just the 5-year statute of limitation that normally applies to criminal conduct. What the RICO statute permits you to do is to join all of the enterprise's criminal conduct together under one indictment, and you can go back a number of years so that the jury gets both the sense of the breadth and the length of time that this particular defendant has been engaged in this enterprise's criminal conduct.
But as the case with the tobacco industry, RICO isn't only used for organized crime, right?
That's right. We've also pulled some tape of Attorney Gerard Lynch, now a senior U.S. Circuit judge for the Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit. Now, at the time of this interview with WNYC in July 1997, he was a law professor at Columbia University. And he explained the way in which RICO, that is the RICO statute, broadens the notion of organized crime so that its application is expanded to enterprises outside of what we traditionally consider mob businesses.
Well, the RICO statute works a fairly radical change in the way in which trials can be conducted in what might loosely be called organized crime cases, though the statute actually applies more broadly than that. The essence of what RICO does is to make it a crime to participate in a series of crimes as part of your involvement in some kind of organized enterprise, which could be an organized crime group or it could be a legitimate business. But by redefining a series of distinct criminal acts as one single crime, RICO has the effect of considerably changing rules of evidence and procedure in ways that, as a practical matter, make it somewhat easier for people to be convicted than would be the case under traditional prosecutions for isolated individual acts.
So I want to back up for a minute and talk about exactly how this lawsuit came to be in the first place, the tobacco one. Who was the whistleblower who shed light on the tobacco industry's behavior?
Well, his name is Dr. Jeffrey Wigan, and he worked on the development of what was then called reduced harm cigarettes. In 1996, he tried to break the news through the media. Here's a segment from the May 31st, 2011 Brian Lehr show, where Lehr talks to Wigan about how blowing the whistle on big tobacco really changed his life.
Dr. Wigan, you're one of the most famous whistleblowers ever. People remember you from The Insider, from 60 Minutes. You write in the foreword to this book about how difficult it was to blow the whistle when you were an employee of the Brown and Williamson Tobacco Corporation. You started there in order to develop a safer cigarette. For those of our listeners who aren't familiar with your story, very briefly, what happened after you blew the whistle?
Well, I mean, I was sued by the industry. I was threatened with incarceration if I was to violate my agreement. I was followed. There were death threats to my two children that required armed bodyguards. It was a torturous process from 1993 through June 20th of 1997.
So a lot of people will remember that name because of the movie The Insider, which was based on his story. It tells much of the history. Is there any audio as to what his motivation was for blowing the whistle?
Yes, again, here on The Brian Lehrer Show.
I think there was a tremendous chemistry and alignment of stars that permeated the whole process. I mean, the Attorney General's support, the Department of Justice support, the FBI support, the school teachers support, the students support, and my belief that the truth, I was obligated to the truth. Now, and the truth was that the industry had intentionally, for profit, put millions of lives at risk and took millions of lives each year with a product they knew, when used as intended, killed. But also at the same time, after watching the CEOs get up in front of Congress and swearing an oath to tell the truth, by me not doing anything, I was guilty of what I would call bystanderism. Bystanderism is you do nothing, and therefore you're just as culpable as those that are doing the harm.
That was Jeffrey Wigand, Dr. Jeffrey Wigand. So RICO was passed in 1970. It's been used in a variety of cases. Do we have any audio showing us how else it was used?
Sure. Your producer actually pulled together this montage from the August 4th, 1988 indictment of six men in what was then known as the WedTech case. The boys should be familiar here. Then U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of New York, Rudolph Giuliani.
WedTech was presented to the public as the proverbial American success story. This indictment now alleges that much of WedTech's success was based on its being run as a racketeering enterprise. The indictment alleges numerous specific instances of bribery, extortion, fraud, tax fraud, obstruction of justice, perjury. If WedTech was the proverbial American success story, these charges raise serious questions about the way we practice politics and conduct business in this city, state, and nation. I must emphasize at the outset that this investigation is continuing. Today, a federal grand jury returned a 58-count indictment charging seven people with violating the federal racketeering statute based on their participation in the bribery and other crimes committed by the WedTech Corporation over a period of years. The indictment charges that the WedTech Corporation was used as a racketeering enterprise to make illegal payments to public officials in order for WedTech to receive, maintain, and insure government contracts. Over 90% of WedTech's business was derived, the indictment alleges, from government contracts. I'll just briefly summarize the charges and then call upon...
It wasn't brief. It went on.
No, it went on for a bit.
Those charges went on for a bit. Andy Lancet, thank you so much. Hey, if people want to hear more from the WNYC Archives, where can they go?
Well, to hear more past programs, please click on the archived shows link at the bottom of the WNYC.org homepage. Also, listeners can subscribe to the New York Public Radio History Notes e-newsletter by going to the WNYC.org/newsletters page.
And just interestingly, as we were having this conversation and going through this past audio, there has been news about e-cigarettes. The Trump administration said it plans to ban the sale of non-tobacco flavored electronic cigarettes and vaping. They called it a vaping crisis. Quote, they said, literally, the Trump administration is making it clear that we intend to clear the market of flavored e-cigarettes to reverse the deeply concerning epidemic of youth e-cigarette use that is impacting children, family, schools, and communities. So this story is to be continued.
Ongoing.
Andy, thanks.
Thanks.
This is All of It on WNYC.